Okay, good afternoon, and welcome to what promises to be another excellent and enthralling entry into our webinar series. Today, we're talking all things quantum computing, quantum readiness, and the threat it creates. Or does it? Is it all hype? Should you care? Should you be doing anything about it? And when, if we should be doing anything? And also, is it going to be easy? Or is it going to be something that's going to be a serious challenge for organizations? We're planning to cover all of this and potentially more, but I'm not doing it alone today. I am joined, if I can get the slide just to move on there, by Francis Gorman. Francis is the principal architect, or security architect, should I say, at Bank of Ireland, where he focuses on building resilient systems that balance innovation with security and trust. His career is centered on the intersection of technology, risk, strategy, helping organizations adapt securely in a constantly evolving threat landscape. Beyond his work at Bank of Ireland, he is an educator and, probably most importantly, the host of the Entropy podcast, which is an excellent podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, I suggest you add it to your download list. So, Francis, welcome and thank you for joining us on the webinar today.
Thanks, Rich. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on board. As always, we are running a Q&A function. So please, throughout the webinar, if you have a question, any burning question, please post it into the Q&A. You can do it anonymously as well. If you don't want to reveal yourself, there's no such thing as a stupid question, particularly when it comes to quantum computing, something that's well out there. So please, put your questions in and we will answer those at the very end. So quantum computing and quantum encryption, the Riemann zeta function is proven true potentially. And just for those that don't know what that is the proof that we can predict prime numbers. And obviously prime numbers being extremely key when it comes to encryption. And I know what everybody's thinking. Oh boy. I also know what half the audience are probably thinking. That's like wondering who these two guys are as I age myself. But Google Sam, Al, and Ziggy, and you're pretty much there. But quantum computing is no longer a quantum leap into the future. So I think we can dive down into today's chat. And actually, I pressed the wrong button there. What I should probably add is, we're not going slides today whatsoever. We are very much jumping into and having a fireside chat with Francis. Now, Francis, although I've given you a bit of an introduction there, it's probably fair to say, the reason why you're joining us, and I suppose it's something that's born out of the podcast or has probably been the center of that podcast and a lot of your work, and I know you're taking the lead on it for the bank, is quantum computing. So you are a resident expert. So less on quantum computing, unless you're going to dive down into the ins and outs of quantum computing, but really quantum encryption and what we should be facing. So I think a great place for us to start is with a poll to understand our readiness overall. So Rebecca, if you could launch the poll for me, please. And today's poll is, how prepared are you for quantum computing and the threat it poses to encryption? So are you fully prepared? Have you got everything rolled out in terms of quantum safe encryption to all your applications? I don't expect anybody to be clicking that. But if you do, myself and Francis would probably want a one-to-one to have a discussion. Are you partially prepared? We have identified all our key assets and are beginning to roll out quantum safe encryption. Getting prepared, we are creating an inventory so we can plan our mitigation strategy. Getting going, we are starting our efforts and looking for a steer in the right direction. You've come to the right place. Not even at the starting point, we've not started any activity and we have no immediate plans. Well, lastly, quantum schmonten, it's a myth. I don't believe in climate change. I don't believe in this. I don't need to worry about it. Let's hope nobody's clicking that one. So if we could, I think that's probably given plenty of time there to get some answers. I think we've now ended that poll. Thank you, Rebecca. One person has gone with the quantum schmonten answer. Francis will change their mind over the course of the next half an hour or so. But unsurprisingly, Most people are in the not even at the starting point. You know, they've not started, they're not getting going, or they're just starting to get going as they go. So I think that's I think that's probably something that is probably spread across the industry, as across organizations. I don't know if that's what you're seeing on the forums and circles that that you're revolving around in at the moment, Francis, that everyone's in that kind of real beginning boat or not even at the beginning.
Yeah, Rich, I think a lot of organizations are either not aware of the quantum threat or have heard about it, but it's not on their to-do list this year or maybe next year. And I think it's quite divided across industries. So I think the financial industry is very aware of what is coming, but it hasn't dissipated across the wider industrial footprint at the moment, from what I can see from talking to people in this area. And listening to the views and opinions from others in this space. So I think the poll is probably very reflective of the current state they're in.
I suppose there's do you see some in denial? As we had that one person calling out that is a myth, but that kind of underpreparedness, is that some of that being driven by the it's often talked about how far away is quantum computing going to get to the point where we need to consider it? Is that kind of driving that the underpreparedness or the
Yeah, well, I think where we are now, so there's a couple of things that have happened in the last year. So the European and American bodies responsible for kind of guidance in the regulatory space have come out with timelines for quantum that there is an expectation that organizations will have high vulnerabilities reduced or removed by 2030, and all cryptographic exposures reduced by 2035. If we pair that back to what that actually means, it means that organizations need to start understanding the level of exposure that they have now in order to be able to map those exposures out and address them appropriately in years, which is about a 9-year window, give or take, which sounds like an awful lot of time. But if you look at the complexity of what this means for organizations, it's not that long at all. And what I mean by that, Rich, is let's think about 9 years and what you can achieve in 9 years. But it's going to take you probably a year to map out, if not more, instances across your environments, on-prem, in cloud, understand your third-party exposures for any of those supply chain connections. And once you have that, then you need to understand, well, what are my high exposures? What does high exposure mean? Well, technically, anywhere that you have long-lived data that's exposed to the internet or to systems that may be vulnerable to a quantum attack. And when we talk about a quantum attack, what are we talking about? Well, the premise of this is all based on an algorithm called, or a theorem called Shor's algorithm. And Shor's algorithm allows you to speed up the factorization dramatically and solve so complex problems in that space. And that's essentially what underpins public key cryptography. So asymmetric cryptography in this instance. And therefore, you need to understand where you have RSA, ECC, all of these different types of algorithms across your environments, and understand the level of exposure that they pertain in the quantum era. And then you need to understand your architectural dependencies and map those out across your systems to really understand what work you need to do. And that's when the real effort starts. So when you understand what you need to do, then you have to mobilize an effort on how you're going to do that work, who needs to be involved. And that gets really, really complex really quickly.
Yeah, no, indeed. And that as you say, even if it's 8 years out, 10 years out, that time will disappear. And that we talk about that as being the so-called Q day, the day that that quantum computing gets to that point where it can execute Shor's algorithm at the point where it can break encryption. I know we've spoke about it, that Q day being pointed as some single day that everyone will suddenly pay attention, but actually it's not as simple as that, is it?
It's not as simple as that, and I'm guilty of this as well, of using Q day in terms of speed by explanations as a point in time when a cryptographic relevant computer will be available. But when you stop and think about this and you break it down, there will be a day that will come in the next 10 years, in the next 12 years, the next 15 years. It's still an unknown date in time, but we do know we're moving closer to it, that we will get a breakthrough, and some country will come out, you would assume, from a massive lab experiment or whatever, and say, we have now broken the quantum problem. We now have hardware that is capable of running qubits at a level that can break today's encryption. And that will cause a level of panic. But that doesn't mean that the entire internet is broken overnight. It's not till we get to a point of a commercially viable cryptographic relevant computer that this technology and this capability dissipates to a wider audience, that actual risk factor really starts to materialize outside of state-sponsored attacks. But the point that the announcement comes will be the point that panic ensues regardless. So if you can no longer trust your systems, you may not be a target to attack, but now you're on a clock, and nobody wants to be racing to fix their entire cryptographic estate on a clock. So I would urge people not to look at this as a quantum problem, but to look at this as a cryptographic agility problem, and to start looking at your cryptographic estate now, because I think what most people will find when they start to get visibility is that there's stuff you should have fixed 10 years ago that's still lingering around. You're going to find all sorts of problems and nightmares that you couldn't imagine existed. And that's where the fun will start, because you're going to get into those lovely conversations around legacy, technical debt. I love the term technical debt, because when you think about it, debt is something that you're going to pay back in the future. Well, the time is coming to pay it back now. So we need to get mobilized and get moving and understand what level of exposure we have and what level of cost is that exposure going to drive us over the next 10 or so years to get ready.
Yeah, I know that there's a whole massive conversation. I think we'll probably maybe come back to a little bit of that cost, because I think it's important that we quantify that so people can get an understanding. But you mentioned, John, that day or that time when quantum computing can break encryption. But actually, to some extent, we're actually here already. With some announcements, and I know that I guess probably one of my issues with quantum computing, and why I might be maybe optimistic about our future when it comes to quantum computing, or maybe pessimistic about quantum computing, is some of the sensationalized headlines that we see about quantum computing has now broken the RSA algorithm, which actually factually is very correct. But actually, if you dive down to the detail, it's not as straightforward, is it?
It's not, no. We've seen some headlines here where we've ran Shor's algorithm, we've broke X bit of encryption. But when you look at it, you can break that in an Excel spreadsheet in most cases. It's overhyped, and actually that's dangerous, because that creates a false industry, and it's been built up to stir fear when actually we have time to prepare. And the message I would like to get out there today is, don't fall into the trap of impending doom. Start to focus on mobilization, understanding the level of exposure you have, and the architectural mapping. And I keep saying that word, architectural mapping and dependency mapping. And let's just talk about that for a minute, Rich, in a scenario. So if you look at the lattice-based quantum resilient algorithms that NIST has put out there at the moment, the byte size is about 50 times larger than you have for the client hello packets, than today's classical encryption. And that creates all sorts of headaches. So if you look at like middleware services, let's talk about switches, routers, etc., and concurrent connections. A lot of cases, that hardware will fall over. It won't be able to sustain. And if you look at the marketplace, Cisco are only about to deliver their 8000 series, which is their quantum resistant routing and networking type hardware kit. So the kit is only starting to come available in the market latter end of this year, early next year. To handle some of those flows. If you look at applications, from the tests I've seen today across different industries, a lot of applications, it screws up their timing. So an application has been fine-tuned within an inch of its life to work with the existing algorithms and encryption methodologies, and then you change it, the connection happens, and the algorithm fall or the application falls over. So it breaks your applications. Then you look at legacy systems. A lot of them have, we've as an industry taken the approach of, we'll deal with it tomorrow, we'll firewall it off, we'll leave it in a corner, no one can go near it. But now they can't handle this level of encryption. So you're left with a choice. Do you start looking at your systems and simplification across the technology stack so that you uplift that hardware, etc. And all of this needs people. And the problem when you need people is people have different agendas. I have a change agenda for security. You have a change agenda for technology. The business want a change agenda to get a new service live. And all of that change still has to mobilize and happen in a world where the underpinning components that you leverage to secure those systems, to enable trust in those systems, to enable confidentiality in those systems and integrity of those systems may need to be replaced. And that is going to cause huge headaches in terms of stakeholder buy-in, in terms of environment readiness and environment availability for testing and running through use cases. And all of this will have to run in parallel somehow across organizations. So my message is, don't fearmonger quantum, but start to think about exposure and start to understand the level of work that has to be done now. And as you know yourself, Rich, in the next year, everyone's going to be a quantum expert. So the day rate.
Next year, I think there's probably 3 months left of that, so everyone needs to get in that position. All like we're AI experts as well, commentating on everything. But it can't actually be understated of how big a challenge that quantum really does pose organizations that isn't part of the consideration. If we think about the threats that quantum creates, and we just think about, well, actually intercepting data, being able to decrypt it. We can even go down to talking about the signing certificates against code, and we can think about some of these issues, or the collect now or store now, decrypt later attacks, which are actually happening currently. So pulling that, collecting that data to a point where we can decrypt them. So I think we quite often think about that, and and it's just probably making that link. Well, do you know what? We just need to be able to swap our current encryption standard out with a quantum safe encryption standard, and everything's going to be done. But there is that entire piece of work, as you say, that crosses people, technology, the process, how are we going to get there, and not just the application. And that's going to mean that, unfortunately, and this probably is misunderstood or not appreciated, the actual huge cost that's going to be, particularly for a large organization, like the bank itself. I mean, how much effort is it to be able to inventory absolutely everything and then be able to attribute a cost to understand that? And as you said, then getting buy-in from the execs, particularly if you go to them with a massive number to say, well, this is what it's going to cost us, even if you're breaking it out over a long amount of time.
So I think in that lens, Rich, if you play the waiting game and you do nothing for the next 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, let's say you don't do anything at all, and then that quantum relevant computer lands, and all of a sudden this is no longer theoretical, it's very real. That's going to cost a huge amount of money, and you're probably not going to get there in time. If you start now, you can be strategic about it. So you can look at your technical refreshes across the environment. Can you bed in quantum readiness to your new hardware coming onto your environment? You can start to talk to your procurement and legal teams. Are you building in checks and balances that you're not buying in new relationships or technology that's going to undermine efforts on one side of the organization against the other? Start talking to legal so that they can start building in legal agreements within the contracts with your suppliers so that they are starting to mobilize readiness and that they're mandated to be at a certain level of readiness against a time frame that's appropriate for the level of service that they provide. And then you need to look at your architectural communities within your organization so that as you look at legacy and as you look at new technology, that quantum just becomes a part of your business, that you understand that level of cryptographic agility. And NIST has released the first wave, let's say, of cryptographic algorithms. But as we design systems going forward, we need to keep them fluid. We need to keep them agile, that we can swap those out. What happens if somebody has made a flaw and they're also susceptible? So let's start engineering systems that can be more fluid, that can be more agile, that we can, we can swap, mix and match cryptography as needed, and get away from this hard-coded library type approach where things are buried within software or applications and systems and kind of hidden from visibility. And I think this is probably a wake-up call for the industry, because cryptography has been that thing that's just worked seamlessly for the last 30 or so years, and we haven't really had to think about it, about the odd upgrade from DES to AES or whatever. But you'll still find DES out there and triple DES, you know, these algorithms that we should have got rid of 15 years ago, never mind now, are still hanging around. Be this, those ones are symmetric, not asymmetric, but they're still vulnerable. So look, I think we need to be building awareness now and understand the level of exposure. And when organizations start to look at public key infrastructure, I suspect they will find all sorts of CAs that they didn't know existed, and long-lived digital certificates that, you know, will outlive themselves when they start looking at them in the round, etc. So, you know, you don't need a certificate for 300 years if you're a average lifespan. I think, you know, all of these things will start to come to light, and then you can build strategies about what you're going to do about them. But if you bury your head in the sand and don't look at this problem will compound, and compound creates cost.
Yeah, no, indeed. And yeah, I think that cost is, yeah, potentially going to be astronomical. And it'll be all we talk about over the next 2 years, I can imagine, as that realization, as people watch this webinar and then think, you know, I now need to go and look at this, and get that understanding. Now, something you mentioned there was asymmetric and also symmetric encryption. And I think it's probably good that we sort of quantify that threat from quantum computing and what it has on encryption, because obviously there's two very different types of encryption, actually two very different levels of threat against those.
Exactly. So your main vulnerability is your public key infrastructures. Symmetric encryption is not as vulnerable. But like I said, if you still have DES and triple DES, and you know, if stuff is bad today, it's going to be bad tomorrow. So, you know, that stuff needs to get fixed regardless. But your main effort and mobilization would be across digital signatures, making sure CAs are up to scratch, and building cryptographic agility. Like, I would really urge people to look at how they serve different levels of encryption across their environments and what underpins the trust. And this comes more complex when we look at cloud. So if we look at cloud environments at the moment, you know, there has been this push to go cloud first, for a number of years. And a lot of organizations have kind of shifted all of their services up to the cloud. And now you've got your cryptography in the cloud. So it's, you know, the old saying, it's someone else's computer. So I think people need to think about their cryptography strategy and where those anchors of trust sit in terms of HSMs, and where you want to, you know, where you want that authority to be within your organization, and how are you going to build the agility on top of that so that you can automate workflows. And if you think about, Rich, what's happened over the last kind of year and a half, 2 years, even longer, we're starting to see a large shift into kind of short-lived certificates across containerized environments, etc. So, you know, this need is only being compounded by further adoption of those technologies. So it's not just a quantum problem. You need to build agility in to serve your existing technology workloads.
Yeah, and I think you're bang on there that it's something that we should have been doing all along. As you say, do you want, you know, SSL and TLS aren't you know, immune to their own issues that we've seen over time. And yeah, so I mean, obviously on the symmetric side, you know, much more challenging. You know, it's Shor's algorithm that you know, is the potential to break asymmetric encryption. But then Grover's algorithm is the one for symmetric, which is exponentially harder to be able to calculate. So, you know, that one we've got a little bit of safety with. So our data at rest, you know, more likely to be secure, but you know, has to be part of the consideration. And we've seen, you know, we saw it with AI, the absolute boom and rapid development. You know, only 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, you know, if you'd have said that Nvidia will be the most you know, expensive or valuable company in the world off the back of an AI boom, and you know, that we've got to the, you know, the capabilities that we see in like ChatGPT 5, you know, you'd probably say absolutely no chance. You know, are we going to see that change? But we're seeing that again on the quantum side, and it's, you know, very good chance that is only going to accelerate further. And you know, what we're looking at as being, you know, 8, 10, 12 years out, There's a good chance that we'll suddenly just see, those enhancements to those platforms will suddenly start chopping that time down to a much smaller time period. So, really adding to that challenge there. So just sorry, Francis, yeah.
I was going to say, Rich, when we talk about time periods, it's probably worth also making people aware of the browser forum's decision to reduce digital certificate lifespans. So March, is it March 15th? Yeah, March 15th, 2029, the lifespan of a digital certificate will move to 47 days, but there's an incremental drop to 200 days from next year and 100 days from 27. So that is happening regardless. So industry bodies are also starting to mobilize and make changes that are going to create greater overhead on your organizations. And the only way you're going to be able to manage that at any sort of scale is with automation and agility. So that is also something to bear in mind when we talk about sliding timescales here. It's not just a quantum threat, it's the industry as a whole starting to mobilize and move in a certain direction, and that is shorter the certificate lifespans across the board.
Yeah, and obviously is that modernization of systems and our approach that's going to be key. But on the flip side, with all of the legacy applications you mentioned at the start, where we're not going to be able to do that, that's we're going to have to figure out how we deal with those. I mean, you mentioned HSMs. I was going to say, there's a good chance that many will never have heard of a HSM or understand what HSM's doing. But I think it'll probably become the mainstay, or definitely something, cloud-based HSMs will be very critical in the not too distant future. So just moving on to something else you mentioned there. You mentioned the word trust, and I think we've talked a lot about technical threat, but I think there's a massive threat when it comes to trust and the complete eradication of what we rely upon, which is in security, which is that CIA triad.
Yeah, sure, Rich. And I think trust is something we underestimate potentially as a driver for how we operate in our everyday lives. I was only speaking this week about the correlation between trust and risk. And I think if you think about the way trust is, think about we place our trust in experts and institutions and brands, etc. But if you can no longer trust the technology that underpins the confidence in those institutions and brands and experts, etc., and you can't protect the information flow across those industries, it doesn't take long for trust to dissipate. You'd often hear it takes a lifetime to build trust and a second to lose it. So if you are that organization that is left standing on classical cryptography when the inevitable does arrive, will your customers still trust you? And that really depends on the line of business that you're in. If you're a mechanic, they probably will. If you're a bank, very doubtful. If you're a financial broker, very doubtful. So I think trust is something we need to be very aware of. And it's almost an invisible layer that wraps around this. But that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the ability to trust systems, institutions, services. And if that trust dissipates, so does your customer base.
Yeah, and worse, painting the cataclysmic worst case scenario. Talk about banks and financial transactions. You could picture a world of where if you can't trust those transactions, then you can't trust your digital money effectively in the bank, and then we suddenly go back to cash is king and storing our money under the mattress, which we've seen the impact of that when the financial crises that we've had, and what happens to banks when there's a run on the banks. So you can it's not so much science fiction really, that we could see like this apocalyptic future. But anyway, let's not dive down into the Running Man or any other apocalyptic future film. Joe, we're 30 minutes in. We try and keep these to 30 to 45 minutes, and we want to leave some time for Q&A because I've seen that we have got some questions in the Q&A. But I think one of the things I think we'll finish on, Francis, is really sort of digital sovereignty and why that's becoming increasingly important, particularly in the context of quantum computing.
Yeah, sure. So digital sovereignty is a really key area, and this kind of bubbled up earlier in the year with French and Italian authorities, and they've actually taken some regulatory action off the back of how their citizens' data gets treated and what types of providers can be used and how it should be stored, etc. Which is a bit more extreme than, let's say, Ireland or the UK at the moment. But if we think about what has changed in the geopolitical scenario and our, countries we once perceived as friendly may not be as friendly anymore.
Coming back to that trust word again.
Back to that trustworthiness again. So we have to understand how we protect our workload. And if we look at the states and the Cloud Act that passed, and I suppose there was a court case in France recently where certain technology executives admitted that the US government could access data on request using the Cloud Act as part of it. We have to think about, and it's kind of back to what I alluded to earlier about where are our trust anchors at the moment? Do we solely provide or solely trust our cloud providers to keep that data secure if they own the entire stack? Or should we be removing that core anchor of trust back to a destination that's maybe physical, that we know where it is, and using that to leverage the cryptography in the cloud? Now, all of it has to be architected, has to be resilient. I'm not suggesting anyone go turn off your KMS service and stick a HSM up there, because you'll probably break more than you appreciate. But it's back to cryptographic agility and how you serve out that encryption. And there's a lot of interesting work happening on the last mile of security. So, if we encrypt data at rest, we encrypt it in transit, but when it's been analyzed in database, etc., it's in the plane and it's there to see. So there's a lot of solutions now working on how do we get that last mile problem, either between the ability to read data and maintain privacy using full homomorphic encryption or other types of techniques. And I think that's a really interesting space, and I suspect you will see a lot more companies coming out in the next year or so. I'm aware of two already who are working specifically on this problem, that will start to kind of look at how do you kind of protect data in all states, and how do you maintain the overarching root trust of that protection within your organization.
Yeah, and we're going back and reflecting on where we are with AI. You've seen, we've all seen the boom in startups that almost are running on that AI economy that's been created. And yeah, exactly the same will occur when we look at quantum. I'm sure we'll obviously have our classic players when it comes to encryption there, but looking at how we can secure that data. And there's something you mentioned that I thought, I talked about, that keyword trust appearing again. But just going back to something you said right at the start, and how that plays into that digital sovereignty, and which is really about third-party risk. Again, you look at Microsoft as an example. They are, they state that they are working to make all of their applications quantum safe, but there's no real time frame for it. And but it's just you have to trust them as the provider to deliver it. But also become part of your third-party scrutiny. What is their strategy? How are they protecting the data? Not today, but at least having a plan, or at least further in the future. As we, third-party compromise is extremely topical at the moment. Plenty of that going on within across many industries, and then opening up a whole nother threat vector through breaking encryption for third parties. There's even more need to insulate yourself, secure them, but make sure they're doing the right thing to defend themselves. So, trust third parties, some key things. Cost, plan. I think there's so many elements that we can take away from this that I think potentially could be their own webinar on their own of how do we deal with those. I think I suppose we've covered some solutions, and not just brought worry and panic, and I think also brought some clarity to the hype. But really, that solution that I can see from what we've talked about is plan, get ahead of it. Start understanding your inventory, start understanding what you need to do, and actually then start acting upon it. And people have started to do that. I think I'm sure. I think it was yourself shared something on LinkedIn. I think it was F5 study of, which of the top 1 million websites, which ones have quantum safe encryption enabled, and 50% of the, or sorry, five in the top 10, so 50% of them have it in place, but very few as you go down from that top websites.
They have, Rich. So I suppose Zscaler have started doing some visibility of your organization for Zscaler users that was announced this week. GitHub have now created quantum resilient access for their repositories. Microsoft have released their quantum roadmap in terms of when they will be quantum resilient. So you're starting to see mobilization from large entities. But I suppose if we were to give people some tangible steps to walk away with from here today, I would say the following. I'd say look at your important business services first. And start to map them out. You don't need technology for that. Talk to the SMEs, understand what the cryptographic libraries are, and understand if they're susceptible or weak to quantum. Then put a lens of long-lived data on top of them and see what's the level of exposure. If you've got data that's only useful for 5 minutes, don't start there. Start in the one that you know you're going to need to protect that data from the next 25 or 30 years. Start communicating with your stakeholders, start talking to procurement, start talking to legal. Start looking at how you catch your suppliers coming in the door so that you can start making those aware of it and start doing comms out to those suppliers as well, taking the same lens of criticality. After that, start building a small team of experts that you can leverage within your organization so that you know who is holding the mantle for the quantum effort, but make sure that you're getting that top-down buy-in. And then I would say after next year, you need to have a really clear idea of how you're going to handle normal change with quantum change and understand if you have the test environments, the people, the process, etc. in place to do that whilst also stopping the bleed. You don't want new programs coming in next year that are undermining your quantum effort while you're spending money trying to close down that gap at the moment. So if I was to give people some advice, start building your inventory. Start having the conversations to build awareness and communication. Start talking to your suppliers and start looking at how you stop the bleed with your architectural communities, building into your requests for proposals, your RFPs, etc. Those mechanisms that you go to the market to look for new technology with. And at least then you will be getting ahead of mass costs by solving tomorrow's problems today.
Yeah, no, couldn't have put it better myself. So let's jump into the Q&A session. And Joe, we have questions in from our participants. And actually, maybe not surprisingly, they are around exactly the same topic, which obviously people are, this is something that they can see as that concern, and something that we've flagged on this webinar, and that really is buy-in from execs and from the board. So, John, actually, I suppose I'll probably group at least two of them together. So the first two is how do I sell this to senior members of the board or executive team, and the other question is a senior exec sponsor critical, or how do we get the business buy-in? So I think they're very sort of very similar questions, Francis.
So I'm going to start with the second question first, Rich. You absolutely need a senior sponsor, and you don't need a senior sponsor. You need your CEO down. You need the board on board here, to make sure that you have buy-in because this program will be costly. It will need support. It will create contention, and you will need to ensure that your organization is bought into to getting this done. So not just a senior leader. You will obviously need a senior leader responsible for delivering your quantum program. But this is not just a technology or a security problem. This is a business problem. So it needs to be top down, bottom up in terms of support. Going back to the first question of me was how would you sell this to the board? So I think the board, I wouldn't go into the board talking about quantum computing and what might happen in the future. I would bring this back to cryptographic resilience and what we need to do now to ensure that we're future fit as an organization, depending on your industry and how important this is for you. If you're in the financial industry, you can leverage DORA. So DORA does specify the need to keep abreast of changes in crypto analysis, including quantum. It's very specific there. So expect the regulators to start asking about quantum readiness and quantum programs over the next months and years. And then bring it back to trust and make people understand at a base level, cryptography underpins everything that we do in the technology space. And that is critically important to ensuring the future longevity of a company and its services.
That's it. Demonstrating business risk is the only way. And as you say, like security culture should be, I'm not sure it always is, but it has to be driven from the top to make sure it happens, particularly with so many people responsible for different elements. So the other question that we have in from Tim D. Williams is, how aware do you think boards are that for the last quarter of a century, they have been benefiting from asymmetric cryptography, e.g. RSA, which went out of patent in 2000, the year after TLS 1.0 was approved in 1999, without needing to pay for it? So I think this comes back to the bill shock question, really.
Well, I think like everything, and I think I said it earlier in the call. You know, we've all meandered around our day jobs for the last 20 or 30 years, just assuming cryptography was part of it. And in the odd security report, you beat up an SSL version 3 or TLS 1.0 as a finding, and the business would have got that back to look at it. But honestly, I think it's like air. Cryptography is something that just happens in the back end and you never see it. You know, we just consume it as part of everything we do in our daily lives, and we don't necessarily think about it. But the oxygen's about to run out of the current classical cryptography, and we need to make sure we have a proper supply coming through. So, I wouldn't necessarily go into the board talking about the level of encryption and the types of encryption we've had over the last 20 years. I talked to them about resilience, the longevity of service line, and maintaining trust with that as the forerunner.
Well, do you know what? I'm going to steal that oxygen analogy, Francis. I think it ties it up very well. So, today we are probably at time now. We're at 45 minutes in. So, thank you to everyone that participated in the Q&A. I'd just like to call out that we have another webinar coming up on the 8th of October. So, looking at five core trends redefining MDR in 2026. So, a little bit forward-looking to detection response, so the threat detection and response area. So please sign up, please join. There's a QR code. There's no quishing involved there. That's a proper one. Sign up for that for more. Another excellent insights from our experts. So lastly, I've got a just had a little bit of it's a follow-up reading provided there by one of our participants or attendees. So that really leaves me just to say thank you very much to Francis for joining us on the webinar. Principal security architect, the Bank of Ireland, but as I say, most importantly, host of the Entropy podcast that I had the pleasure to go on a few months back. Don't listen to me, but there's plenty of other great speakers on there. And just to say thank you to everybody that has joined us today on this webinar. We will follow up with any questions. So if you do any further questions, please send them in and we can follow up on those. And we will hopefully see you very soon on the next webinar. Thank you very much.